This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 15th of August, 2022, and markets closing last week with a bang. We saw the U.S. market posting a new high for the cycle, at least in the S&P 500, and this sort of 50% retracement level exceeded. I saw one post, and I don't like this use of statistics. I'm sure, Peter, you would probably agree with me, but that once we've posted a bear market and then the S&P 500 has come back to more than 50%, in every single case in history, the logic goes, or the record goes, we've gone back to make new highs. So we have quite an interesting market here. And we have, I guess the local cause of the enthusiasm was a University of Michigan sentiment survey, the preliminary one for August, showing that expectations had rebounded and that even if the current situation had declined a bit. And as well, I think it's important that those long yields stayed orderly after a big jump on the prior day. So we didn't have some new rise in yields aggravating the situation. But I'll let you take it away from here, Peter. I mean, we were scratching our head at this, but we have to recognize this is an illiquid month, and the market is built a narrative that it seems very difficult to challenge. Even the Fed disagreeing directly with the market has not really made much of an impression.
No, I think you're starting out the conversation in a good way. I think it echoes pretty much my own thoughts here. And I think that the figures we've got out overnight from China in early morning showing a considerable slowdown here in July and an interest rate cut. And we on Friday we had new yuan loans being extremely weak. So I think that's a little bit of bump on the road on this whole credit impulse coming back. So I think China's slowdown, obviously, I think is one more data point or one more event that is bolstering the easing of slowdown. I mean, China's PPI and what arguably is taking place with increasing slack in the economy. I don't know whether it's record. I don't think it's record, but it's a pretty high youth unemployment rate in a recent historical context, and all this slack is just will mean that there won't be the same pressure from the labor market and on input costs in China, except maybe from the energy and the metal space if that continues to be strong. But so I think that means that China will export less inflation. That means that the easing inflation narrative becomes easier to swallow for a lot of investors here in the here in Europe and the US. But the key thing, and that's where I still think that we are walking in a very misty forest, is that it's to what degree the services sector, the tightness in the labor market in Europe and the US, wage dynamics, and even more importantly, the rent dynamics. We're seeing a lot of stories coming out both in the US and Europe that these rent dynamics are getting very terrible. So that will be the key determinant of inflation in the services sector, and that I think ultimately will be the thing to watch in the coming months. So right now momentum can extend in equities, but and as you say, we are in August, but as we roll into September, we're getting the next couple of months data points on inflation, and these dynamics will be very interesting to either we go, as you said, from based on the statistics you mentioned, can we go much higher, or will we reach a pivot point and roll over?
Yeah, I just want to briefly, before I turn over to Ulis with some comments on commodities, and by the way, the reason we have no slide deck today is we're doing a quick recording here because we all have to go in for a set of meetings this morning, so we have low availability in terms of time. But you mentioned the housing affordability issue, very key component of inflation. It is the largest component of inflation, this owner equivalent rent, even though that specific measure is a bit lousy, to say the least. Affordability index, at least for new mortgages. Now, ironically, people that have seen decent advances in their wages and they're holding the same 30-year mortgage they've held all along, of course, not affected by this, but those that need to buy a new house and put out a new mortgage, affordability is at its worst ever. And cue the NAHB, the Housing Home Builder Survey, one of the more leading indicators of the U.S. housing market. It's out today with a July figure, that June figure, by the way, collapsing down to 55, which if you don't include those sort of key pandemic outbreak months, early 2020, that's the weakest reading for that particular survey since 2015. So clearly, even if we are looking for a somewhat soft landing, the housing market itself is still being impacted by that massive rise in mortgage rates that we saw coming into this year and up until recently. And we have to mention, it's not just the 30-year rate itself, it is the mortgage rate. And that spread on the mortgage versus the U.S. 30-year has also increased. So we're still at around 5.5% for mortgages in the U.S. All right, let's send it over to you. We have oil prices that look fairly orderly here, but we're still dealing with this very high natural gas price in Europe and the whole drought situation, meaning that Germany can't get coal essentially to its plants to sort of offset some of the risks with burning or upping its coal production. Oh, sorry, coal-based power production.
Exactly, John. There'll be a lot of focus on water levels at the River Rhine this week as we are hitting critical levels. And with that, also the impact on the global economy, for the European economy especially. But overall, we're starting the week on a bit of a softer note here. We got the Bloomberg Commodity Index hit a two-month high last Friday. Since then, we just come off the boil a bit, and that is driven by the weakness in the data from China, as mentioned. So especially the metal space, we've got copper back below 360 down 2%. We got iron ore down close to 4% in Singapore. The steel consumption steel production in China last month dropped 6% year on year. That was the weakest July in 4 years, and obviously that's steel is where iron ore is used for. So we're seeing some weakness there. So that would be the focus there as the week kicks off. In the oil market, down 1% right now. There are some focus on the Iran new nuclear talks. An EU proposal potentially could receive some acceptance by Tehran. So we'll watch that. But obviously also, again, the global outlook, which remains very murky with the demand outlook in China being somewhat offset by the supply outlook elsewhere. Aramco had another massive result, naturally, with the oil prices where they are. They basically see that that oil demand will continue to rise for a number of years, with the transition being slower than the market is anticipating. I think I just want to mention, John, as well, the grain sector, because we had that monthly WASDE report out on Friday. On balance, it ended up being negative for the market, especially soybeans, as they raised their production forecast for soybeans, but also the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that is, eased concerns about the supplies from the Black Sea area. So that's also adding some downward pressure to corn and wheat today. We have to remember that this data was compiled before the start of August, and since then we've had some days with extreme heat, potentially stressing the crop. So the picture may not be as bearish as the data initially pointed to. And just finally, if one market that did respond very bullish to that WASDE report was cotton. We saw an incredible 19% drop from 1 month to another to the next in U.S. The outlook for U.S. crop production. So we finished the limit up on Friday. The production in the U.S. looks set to hit a 12-year low. The cotton prices recently has been under pressure from the global economic slowdown fears leading us to buy a few fewer t-shirts, but the supply side there is challenged, and that's what we have to remember across many commodities, that demand may be softer but supply may be challenged as well.
Yeah, and supply for one of the key things, crude oil, going to be very interesting as we head into the fall and the U.S. Shuts off its deliveries from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. I'm really interested in what happens in November post-election timeframe in the U.S. What a spectacular chart, that cotton chart, by the way. Volatility, to say the least, over the last several months. All right, let's have a look briefly at FX. So we've seen, last week was a real roller coaster ride for fundamentals for the U.S. dollar, because we had a soft CPI figure on Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, it was Wednesday, that saw the dollar selling off as U.S. yields dropped on the anticipation that inflation is peaking. Of course, the Fed can ease off of its hawkish message. And then later in the week, the big jump in yields, for whatever reason, there was a multitude of drivers there, but a lot of it was just market flow that supported the dollar. And then Friday, the dollar continuing higher on really no narrative or other development that would support it, other than perhaps that University of Michigan survey and the expectations component picking up, perhaps people realizing this could mean that we could be set for a more sustained comeback in the economy, at least on the services side of the U.S. economy, if sentiment improves. And I think that's going to start pushing out when the market believes that the Fed might roll over. That's certainly what we're seeing in the forward Eurodollar strip here. But in any case, if we just rely on the technical situation, Eurodollar really looks like it's kind of rolled over here, and especially if it closes below something like 102.50 today. Cable, similar, so sterling versus the dollar below this, well, really where it is now in the low 121s. Elsewhere, though, we not got a resolution of the situation. So dollar yen, which stuck a big sell-off last week on that CPI release out of the U.S., has not really chosen a side. I think you would need to see U.S. yields picking up in more determined fashion. Let's call it the 10-year pushing to 3% or higher, which I think would also represent a big break or limiter on the ability of the equity market to recover if we do hit that 3% level again in the U.S. 10-year. That's likely what you would need to get dollar yen back looking to the upside. 135 plus would be needed there. And then with the focus on China easing, a weak Chinese economy, the Aussie dollar rally getting tamed a little bit here, but still did break higher last week, and would need to drop back below 0.70 on Aussie dollar to suggest that that rally is being challenged. Peter, we have a few earnings coming in. I think one of the interesting stories last week was this delisting, and we did discuss it on the podcast, this delisting of some Chinese companies. The really big ones, though, are still out there. How should investors tread around that, and what are you looking at in terms of earnings this week?
Well, that's the reason why we didn't talk about it, because they announced a delisting on Friday, but our strategist out of Hong Kong, Redmond, has written a piece on what it means. And the big ones that delisted in the US, of course, were SOE, so state owned enterprises from China. It's the real signal value, of course, is coming when Chinese technology companies are delisting. But I think in any case, the trajectory is for most, if not all, Chinese companies to delist because of that new these new rules for foreign listed companies in terms of what the US expect and on auditing. The US wants to be able to at least have some oversight on auditing of foreign companies that are listed and tapping into the US primary capital markets. So I think we will eventually see a complete decoupling. And as Bloomberg also noted, a lot of the Chinese companies, they do actually have now a higher daily liquidity in terms of traded value in the Hong Kong and mainland exchanges than in the US. So why have the ADR? Well, it's more convenient for US investors, but they can always buy a global fund if they want that exposure. But if we look at the earnings calendar, it's very much in Chinese focus here today, but also Tencent on Wednesday. We have Xiaomi on Friday. If we look to tomorrow, I think Walmart and Home Depot, obviously being the big consumer names in the US, that will sort of hopefully dictate or give a little bit of color where we are and where we're going. Walmart expected to see revenue up 7%, so slightly below or maybe at par with the inflation, certainly below, the inflation. I think that the most items in Walmart have shown in the past year. So I think in real terms, actually, Walmart is not keeping up with inflation, and Home Depot, of course, related to the housing market. So I think that one is actually the most interesting one. And then we have C Limited, a big e-commerce company in Asia, reporting as well tomorrow. And then it's very light in Europe, but on Wednesday we have Coloplast and Carlsberg here from Denmark. And then Thursday, Estée Lauder and ADN, which is the most important one because that is the challenger in the global payments industry to Block and PayPal, etc. It's a Dutch company, so focus on that one. And then the whole renewable energy, the energy independence push here in Europe is really seeing or is bolstering demand for these air to water heat pumps, which can electrify your heating. But then again, as John would say, where are you getting your electricity from? Maybe that's secondary thoughts here. So the whole idea is just to electrify the heating of homes. And Nibe Industria, which is Nibe Industrials out of Sweden, are reporting on Thursday. They're one of the major manufacturers of these air to water heat pumps. So we're watching that.
And it's not cheap to heat your home with electricity, even if it is a air to water or air to air heat pump, as I've discovered this last winter in Denmark and record the power prices. The macro calendar this week, very briefly, the focus this week, I think, mostly on that Wednesday U.S. retail sales report for July. I think very interesting. That was the month, of course, when house prices, but when gasoline prices were peaking so aggressively. And since then, we've just collapsed back to what are, especially in real terms, it's not a particularly high gasoline price. So, you know, this, we have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt. But interesting to see the X energy figures versus the, of course, the headline figures for the retail sales on Wednesday. And then, as noted, that housing survey today, we have housing starts and building permits tomorrow out of the U.S. Some RBA minutes out tonight out of Australia. A rate decision from the RBNZ expected to hike another 50 basis points. And the FOMC minutes, those are both up on Wednesday. And Norway, they're expected to go another 50 basis points with the Norges Bank on Thursday. But yeah, I think the key is, to me, we've seen a very aggressive move here in risk sentiment. And I think it maybe it has room to run. I think the Fed is really starting to get uncomfortable with this move here, and but does not have the ability to really push back in any meaningful way until probably the Jackson Hole Conference, 25th to the 27th of this month. And in the meantime, the only thing in the market that could push back against, I think, would be a big further surge in U.S. yields, treasury yields at the longer end of the curve. So that would be one key indicator to keep on your radar here. For now, that is a wrap, and we'll be back tomorrow with another Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.